From Carlisle to Pittsburgh, Altoona to York, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, party nominees for statewide judicial posts have been decided. The city of Pittsburgh will have a new mayor, and Philadelphia's progressive district attorney has won re-election. David Taylor and Stephen Bloom are here with a Capitol Watch look at the primary election results. And some gave the last full measure of devotion, and we remember them this Memorial Day. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania House Republican leader Jesse Topper, who represents Bedford and Fulton counties, is suggesting the financially insolvent Southeastern Pennsylvania Transit Authority, or SEPTA, should be privatized, saying, quote, "Facing such a serious problem, the solutions for this or any agency in crisis simply cannot be from the same bank of tired ideas," end quote. SEPTA already receives $757 million in annual subsidies from state taxpayer coffers and is facing a deficit while asking for even more money from the state. The agency has refused to make any substantial reforms and is bogged down by labor union contracts. Topper said, "We must find new and innovative solutions and not just continue to throw money at the problem." Nippon Steel is sweetening the pot in its efforts to acquire U.S. Steel. The Japanese steelmaker said it now plans to invest $114 billion in U.S. Steel's United States operations, including building an entirely new steel mill. The merger was blocked last year by then-President Joe Biden, supposedly on national security grounds, while President Donald Trump has also expressed opposition to the deal in the past. He did order a new review of the security implications and said he is open to working out a new deal with Nippon. Meanwhile, the other suitor for U.S. Steel, Cleveland-Cliffs, recently announced the closing of three of its plants, including two in Pennsylvania, further weakening its bid to acquire U.S. Steel. State Representatives Martina White of Philadelphia and Clint Allett of Tioga and Bradford counties have reintroduced the Lifeline Scholarship Program in the State House. The program would give K-12 school choice options to students in the state's lowest performing school districts. Despite the limited nature of the program, which would specifically uplift minority students, it has been opposed by Democrats in the legislature and was line-item vetoed by Governor Josh Shapiro 2 years ago. With current budget negotiations facing a June 30th deadline, the lawmakers have decided to try again to pass the Lifeline Scholarship Program. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Pennsylvania voters have selected candidates for seats on the statewide Commonwealth and Superior Courts. Meanwhile, incumbent Pittsburgh Mayor Ed Gainey has lost his bid for re-election to challenger Corey O'Connor. And soft-on-crime Philadelphia DA Larry Krasner will remain in office. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation are here to discuss the results and their impact. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. This week, our leading lady, Rebecca Euler, from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, is on assignment, so it's just me and my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thanks so much for being on the show.
Very happy to be here, David. Thank you.
So it's you know, the wheel keeps rolling with it comes to, you know, public affairs and political things, and now we've just seen the close of another primary election. Oftentimes, the primary election in the odd year doesn't attract that much attention, but we had some serious stuff go down this time around.
Yeah, some of the really important things that happen in Pennsylvania elections on these so-called off years are judicial elections, for example, and there were two of those statewide judicial offices that were on the ballot. going into this primary election season. And there was a Republican primary for a Commonwealth Court position. Mm-hmm. And the Commonwealth Court is an intermediate appellate court that deals with state issues primarily.
Mm-hmm.
An attorney named Matt Wolford secured the win in that race and is going to be the fall flag carrier for that seat against a Democrat. And then in Superior Court, there's the other mid-level appellate court in Pennsylvania. Attorney Maria Batista emerged the winner of the primary.
On the Republican side.
On the Republican side, and she has a Democratic opponent for the fall, a former state rep, Brandon Newman, who actually I served in the House with Brandon back in the day when I was in the state House. And
he's been a Common Pleas court judge since then.
Correct. He left the General Assembly to go be a judge back home in his home county.
Well, and it's something where I remember Representative Newman before he was Judge Newman, and he was a big champion of the trial bar, of the litigation industry, and certainly they'll be very strongly behind him to try to get one of their own in a black robe on the statewide bench.
And that's why these elections end up being so important, because you know we don't often understand that because of the nature of We watch the advertising, all the activity that's there for candidates running for governor or state senator, U.S. senator, that sort of thing. Much of the work that impacts Pennsylvanians happens through the courts.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get a radical justice on the courts at that intermediate appellate level, it can cause some serious heartburn down the road.
So these are races that we'll be talking about more between now and November. So it's just the two statewide judicial races, one on the Commonwealth Court, one on the Superior Court. And then, of course, on the November ballot, there'll be the retention votes for the incumbent jurists whose 10-year terms are up.
They don't have to run for re-election necessarily, but they have to run in order to determine whether there would be the potential of a new election.
Right. It's an up-down, yes-no vote on whether or not that particular jurist should continue. Also, in the odd year election, important local elections, and we saw a real transformational election out in Pittsburgh, where incumbent Mayor Ed Gainey was defeated by his challenger, the Allegheny County Comptroller, Corey O'Connor. And so this is two consecutive elections where Pittsburgh has seen its incumbent mayor kicked out.
And previously, Pittsburgh had been a very stable environment in terms of longevity of the mayor and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you're seeing is really caused by there's a political, ideological struggle going on in the background, in this case on the Democratic side,
right,
as between progressives and more old school or traditional Democrats. Mm-hmm. And that's been going on in Pittsburgh. And I think the fact that the mayor was, you know, lost the primary is a big deal. And it signals that there's at least still some life in the old blue dog Democrat idea of a Western Pennsylvania Democrat who also fights for some values that are shared by many in the middle class.
Yes. And I think also just a question of governance, because the progressives, the far left, have a lot of really kooky ideas about permitting drug use and homelessness and things that we've seen happen out in Pittsburgh that were really shocking. Tent cities and people on the streets downtown, clearly with mental illness and or drug psychosis. Like the fact that the city just seemed so much less safe than in years past. I think that this is a big contribution to the political environment that led to a big change like this. People want to see local government do the things it's supposed to do. Clean streets and fill the potholes and make sure that violent crime doesn't get a hold.
And then the other thing is, and it's part of the trend you were discussing, how Pittsburgh seemed to be falling into a different sort of a cultural mindset. In Philadelphia, the district attorney, Larry Krasner, won his primary race.
Mm-hmm.
And so he'll be back on the ballot as a Democrat.
Yeah.
And Larry Krasner is one who has espoused a really radical form of criminal justice reform that involves
things, not prosecuting criminals.
Yeah, it's not, and criminal justice reform is an important subject, and in fact, it's a very bipartisan subject in Pennsylvania.
Be, yes,
but what Krasner's doing is in a whole different realm.
Yeah.
of really ignoring the idea that we have laws in the civil society,
and the permissiveness that he has shown, especially with not arresting or charging people who are caught in possession of an illegal firearm or illegally in possession of a firearm. I know those things sound the same, but they're slightly different. But still, if you have a criminal with a gun or a person who holding a gun that is not allowed by law, not licensed, what have you, like if you fail to prosecute those people, it means that there are more guns on the street and more people holding them who are not law abiding, which means that more people get shot. If you catch somebody who's got a gun, who's not supposed to have that gun or any gun at all, you charge that person, you arrest that person, you get that person off the street. Larry Krasner says that's not nice.
And the other piece about the election is simply that all across the state, there were primary races for county row offices and township supervisors and all that sort of thing, which, again, doesn't make a lot of the headlines, but really determines in many cases how you're going, as an individual citizen, how you're going to interact with government.
Oftentimes you get your ballot and that no one has filed for a particular position. And, you know, we need to have citizen engagement, including a willingness to, you know, to spend your own time and attention on, you know, on some of these local offices that do the real governing, at least the sorts of things that you as a citizen are probably the most likely to encounter. Like I said before, about making sure that the potholes are filled and that the snow gets plowed and the trash gets hauled away. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. So we survived this election. And so this sets us up for November, where we'll have these key races. Obviously, both Philadelphia and Pittsburgh are very heavily registered to the one side, Philadelphia especially. And so, you know, we expect to see those primary candidate winners elected into office and to take the oath in January. The statewide races of the judicial races that we mentioned, that those two, those will attract a lot of attention. So people can expect to, you know, see ads and receive mailers and all those things. But of course, that for each one of these milestones that we pass, it brings us closer to the big enchilada of 2026, where we'll go through everything all over again, where we have this time around, we have, you know, half the state Senate, every member of the state house, but also that we'll have a race for governor.
Indeed. And, you know, Pennsylvania, it continues to be a purple state.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a state where you can sit and think, well, you know, the Democrats own that state. They can win. They can win the governorship. They can expand their House majority. They can take majority in the Senate. And others say, well, you know, the Republicans can do that. Pennsylvania is a state that's always up for grabs.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, right now we have this sort of split government where the two legislative bodies are controlled by separate parties.
Mm-hmm.
The governor is a Democrat, so he can align with the Democrat House to the extent he chooses to. But with the GOP-controlled Senate, it's tough for either side to get their agenda.
Yeah, nobody gets to run the table.
Exactly. So hopefully in an ideal world, it brings us to sensible, practical political compromise. In the real world, it also creates just a lot of times a reaction of divisiveness and anger.
Right.
But the system is designed to represent the people in a place where they can advocate for the causes they believe in.
Yes. And you know, and it, again, as the listeners often hear me say on this show, the foundational fact of Pennsylvania is that the king did not know what was over here when he gave the land grant to the Penn family. And so, you know, Pennsylvania is a big, wildly diverse state geographically. And that, you know, it's no wonder that Pennsylvania continues to be, you know, a swing state because of the really profound regional differences depending on where you are in the Commonwealth.
And that's been the case even back before Pennsylvania was a state.
I really do hope, this time around that we do have a meaningful gubernatorial race, my hope would be that that would be the stage upon which those really, really important debates are conducted. But, 4 years ago, that Governor Shapiro's challenger more or less refused to engage him, pretty much refused to talk to anybody who didn't already support him, and that's how we got such a lopsided outcome. And, in the election before that, the Governor Tom Wolf ran for re-election and won. And immediately after he won, he said that he was for mass commercializing recreational marijuana. And my thought was, that's probably an issue that should have been hashed out during the campaign. Like, if you're running and you are going to do certain things if you get elected or reelected, you should tell people about that. And again, he didn't, and he just dropped this bombshell as a big surprise. And I just thought that was very unfortunate. I mean, I have strong views on that. Everybody knows. But even if it wasn't that particular issue, if in a second term, the governor plans on doing really, consequential things, things that are high impact, it's healthier for the body politic to get that validated, to get the proverbial mandate, as it were, that this is what I said I was going to do, and now I am properly empowered by the people to pursue that agenda.
Indeed, indeed. And so as we bring that whole conversation back to what's happening now in the Capitol,
right,
we're gearing up. We're seeing both legislative chambers gearing up for what will be most likely the budget fight leading to the state budget deadline of June 30th. This week and next week are non-session weeks, but then the both chambers will come back into session in June, and they've got a lot of session days scheduled, and we will see this process playing out in the real world as to how do we effectively dispose of the need to take care of all these different situations in Pennsylvania that cost money.
Right.
And prioritize those in a way that makes sense for taxpayers and yes, the long-term strength of the state without tapping out our reserves and our rainy day fund.
Right. And again, I don't want to be tedious, but this is just too important to let go unsaid. Pennsylvania has a structural budget deficit. That means that mandatory spending is increasing faster and at a greater amount than the growth in revenue from the natural expansion of our economy. This is being driven by our demographic crisis, where we have a large and growing population of senior citizens, of people who are beyond their working years, people who themselves oftentimes require taxpayer-funded services, and we don't have enough of younger people still in their working lives to pay the taxes to sustain state government at its current scale. Like, this is the foundational fact of Pennsylvania's state budget. And this is something that Governor Shapiro has not addressed in any way at all. Like, these are all facts that he's just going to completely ignore. And it's putting us in a very dangerous path because, we spent too much last year. Well, the legislature gave him more than they should have. And I was with the House Republican leader, Mr. Topper, Jesse Topper from Bedford County. And he said, even if we flat funded the budget this year, we're still in deficit 2 years from now. So we are going to be we're in trouble, and I don't know how we're going to get out of it.
Yeah, constraint is going to be necessary in order to move forward.
And growth. I mean, the combination of spending restraint now and moving the needle on Pennsylvania competitiveness so we can have stronger economic growth, so that there are more jobs and there's more opportunity, so we can keep more of those younger people, maybe attract more of those younger people from other states, and in that way, build out a healthier tax base so that the natural growth of the economy will throw off enough revenue to meet those mandatory obligations of spending. But Pennsylvania has had chronic economic underperformance, and this is longstanding. This is year after year, decade after decade under, you know, governors and legislatures of both parties that because we can't get out of our own way in Harrisburg, our economy does not grow as fast as the national average. And so with every year, we sort of quietly, invisibly fall further behind.
We don't live in a vacuum.
Correct.
What we do is in competition with all the other states around us and the states that are farther away from us. And they're getting the quality, well-educated, hardworking people that belong in Pennsylvania and taking them elsewhere.
Yes, sir. And that's what we're trying to address, trying to turn around. Oh boy, we got a long way to go. So it's going to be exciting. I'm not going to take any bets about finishing the budget before the constitutional deadline. I think people should just like not make summer plans. But anyway, I'm glad that we get to go through that together at the close of our time here, Steve. Where can people go to learn more about you and your organization and the work that you do?
They can go to commonwealthfoundation.org on the web.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. So we'll welcome Rebecca back next time. But from Steve and me, thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. As a young boy growing up in the coal patch town of Hermony, Pennsylvania, the first holiday of the summer season was always an exciting one. Both my father and my mother were active in the local VFW post, so our family was always involved in preparations for the parade, which would make its way from the VFW at one end of town to the fire hall at the other end. This was not exactly a long distance, actually only a few blocks, but at that age, marching with the scouts, it seemed like quite a hike. The whole town gathered in front of the fire hall, where red, white, and blue wreaths adorned the town's memorial. There, appropriate words were said about the sacrifices made for our freedom, and then the pop, pop, pop of the honor guard's guns pierced the calm, followed by the mournful strains of taps. This same scene will play out again this Memorial Day in towns big and small all across America. Before adjourning to our backyard barbecues or heading out to shop the weekend specials, many, hopefully all Americans, will take the time to reflect on the real reason for the holiday. Our country has not always had a Memorial Day, although we have, since the first shots were fired at Lexington and Concord, had heroic war dead deserving of the honor. Memorial Day, as it is now celebrated, had its origins in the Civil War era. President Abraham Lincoln set the tone for the concept of Memorial Day while delivering his address at the dedication of the National Cemetery at Gettysburg, noting that the gathering took place on a great battlefield of the Civil War, Lincoln explained that, quote, "We have come to dedicate a portion of it as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that a nation might live." The president went on in the most eloquent language of the ages to talk of the, quote, "brave men living and dead who struggled here and how they have, quote, consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract." Lincoln thus gave rise to the concept that those who have died and those who have served our nation engaged in a noble task worthy of honoring. General John A. Logan of the Grand Army of the Republic, an organization of former soldiers and sailors, is generally credited with organizing the first Decoration Day, the name by which Memorial Day was first known, on May 30, 1868. General James Garfield, who would later serve as President of the United States, was the featured speaker at the first Dedication Day services held at Arlington National Cemetery. Following the services, more than 5,000 citizens helped decorate the graves of both Union and Confederate soldiers. Meanwhile, in Pennsylvania, the small town of Bowlesburg, located outside of State College, had already established a Memorial Day tradition. According to legend, a teenage girl by the name of Emma Hunter was laying flowers at her father's grave when she met an older woman Elizabeth Meyer, who was placing flowers on her son's grave. The two women met, exchanged personal stories, and agreed to meet again the same day the following year. Others learned of the plan, which grew into an event involving the entire town, and a commemoration was held on July 4, 1865. Unfortunately for Tani Bolesberg, history gives credit to Waterloo, New York, as the official birthplace of Memorial Day. President Lyndon Johnson issued a declaration of such in 1966 because Waterloo made it an official community celebration on May 5, 1866. Thus, although Bolesberg held the first Memorial Day observance, the lack of official town action cost it formal recognition. Regardless, the concept of setting aside one day each year to honor those who have died in the service of our nation has become an annual tradition. But it was not until 1971, when Congress redeclared Memorial Day a national holiday, that it came to be celebrated on the last Monday in May. It is, as President Lincoln said, quote, altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. On Memorial Day, we should not only pause to remember, but we should heed the balance of Lincoln's words, uttered that cold November day in Gettysburg. Lincoln appealed to the nation to, quote, be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. With the Town Hall Commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 30 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WISL-AM in Shamokin, WEMA-FM and WBHV-FM in State College, along with WRJV-FM in Breezewood, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. We'll be right back.
Thank you.